Hey, I'm Alan McGuire.
I'm Andrea Cleary.
And this is Juvenalia, a podcast where we talk to an interesting person about a bit of pop culture that was important to them when they were young. Our guest today is one of the coordinators of Trans and Intersex Pride Ireland, Jenny McGuire. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I reject the thing that I'm interesting, but I'm so happy to be here.
Also, no relation, we should say up front.
Alan's my dad.
Jenny is my daughter. Yes, that's true. Imagine if I had a daughter all this time and I'd never mentioned it on 180 episodes of the podcast. That would be neglectful, to say the least.
Micro tiny trans activist.
You mention your dogs almost every episode. never your daughter.
Okay. Speaking of me being old, this is a topic that's made me feel the oldest I've ever been because I started watching it when I was a homeowner. So we're in uncharted territory here. Please, Jenny, tell us what you want to talk to us about.
I want to talk about RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
I got into Drag Race when I was 11 years old, which was 10 years ago. And I used to watch it on Netflix on my phone in secret, so no one else would find out that I was watching it. And it was such a little safe haven for me, and I still watch it every week to this day.
Oh, that's amazing. So lovely. This was my first time watching Drag Race for this episode. I have not avoided it, but so maybe 3 years ago, I was like, everyone's watching Drag Race. I want to watch Drag Race. And so I just put on season one, episode one. Yeah. Okay. So the face you're making right now, Jenny, is the face that everyone I've said that to has made. And they're like, no, you can't start at season one. And people have different opinions on where to start. And then I just got confused and never did it. So for this, I watched season five, which I think is regarded as like the best place to start, or at least one of the best seasons of the show.
That was your assigned reading.
Exactly. It was my assigned reading, and I did it and I loved it. And I will continue. I will continue with the other series. But yeah, did you start with season one, both of you, or how did the journey go?
So for me, again, it was similar. I saw everybody talking about it on Twitter. Mm. And this was probably around the time of season six, I would say. So I did start from season one on Netflix, and by the time probably season eight was over, I caught up, I'd say. And watched up as far as, I think, season 14 or something. Whenever it went off Netflix, I didn't follow it after that. But yeah, but like those first like 8-9 seasons, I've watched a few times at this point. So yeah, season one is rough, but I'm a completist, so I can't not watch it. So how about you, Jenny? Where did you start?
I started watching on season one as well, actually, but I fell in love with season one. There's this, not to spoil this, but there's this moment in season one where the Queen Angina comes out as HIV positive. And I remember where I was when I was watching it. Like, it stood out for me as such a poignant moment. And like, that is ultimately what the show is all about. And like, I loved it so much that when I went to go watch season two, when they had a bit more budget, I found it so different, and like that I didn't watch season two until like 5 years later or something.
Yeah, season one's very different in a lot of ways. So the stage is tiny. It's like this Vaseline smeared over the camera.
Okay. Right.
In terms of like now that there's such a big thing made of their walk-ins on the first episode, Rebecca Glasscock walks in jeans and a nice top in episode one into the workroom.
A beautiful, nice top. Aww. How dare you? It was a low off the shoulder moment. Well, Bibi Zaharia-Benay showed up in like a business attire and like just so good. And like, it's just so like they literally filmed it in a basement, like where stars from season seven, Trixie and Katya, like film their web series, like that's where they filmed the now continent spanning empire of RuPaul's Drag Race. Amazing. Where they filmed
that's amazing. And yeah, actually on Trixie and Katya, I'm I'm familiar with that. I haven't watched either of their seasons, but I'm familiar with them. I watch their Netflix kind of watch along show on YouTube, and I listen to their podcast as well. And I'm obsessed with both of them, like completely obsessed with them. And I've seen Katya's like rap during the one of the performances. It like her All Stars 2,
yeah.
And good. I got, and then there's also that. So that was Coco Montrese in who did the really bad one in that, was it?
No, that was Roxy Andrews.
Oh, sorry, Roxy. So I had seen Roxy in that, and then when I watched her walk in season 5, I was like, oh my God, it's her. It's her. And so it was like kind of worlds colliding. It's like how people feel when they watch, like, I think, like Marvel stuff and like Ant-Man shows up. I'm like, Ant-Man's here. Oh my God. I get to see his origin story. Like, it was amazing.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. And also, like, I had to watch this on Wow. So I got like a subscription to it, and I couldn't believe how many drag races there are now. Like, it's actually overwhelming. If you're a fan of Drag Race and a completionist, like, this is a lot of your spare time.
It's like, if I watch any TV in the week, it's an episode of Drag Race from a new franchise. Like, yeah. I've seen every franchise, which is like, for those that don't know, the number of franchises in Drag Race, so there's US, Canada, UK, France, Spain, Belgium, Sweden, Italy, Thailand, Philippines, and Australia. And that is, I bet I missed some. Oh, Brazil and Mexico as well. Each have multiple series. Some of them have all-star versions where past contestants come forward. And like, this is only within the last 5 years that it's kind of exploded. Like, they did 8 years of it with like nothing else.
It's mad.
I guess we go back to that season. What drew you in season one?
Yeah. I mean, like, ultimately, RuPaul always tells this story about Drag Race, which is so, makes me roll my eyes. She's like, it's a microcosm of the human spirit or something. And like, but ultimately, like, that is what it is. It is just, you get to love these people that like are not meant to be on television. These people are meant to be in dark nightclubs. And you get to actually, and then perform on stage for 4 minutes and then they get off. Like, the getting to see like these people truly living in their truth. Like, living in their truth is exactly the expression for it, in that they go in, it's not a joke. Like, this is their talent, and talent is taken seriously. And so getting to actually see that and getting to like experience that as like a baby queer, like, was completely transformed how I could like view the world. And like, I very much credit like any confidence I have, any like any nonsense I do, like, it is in part attributed because I truly saw myself when I watched Drag Race, of these people marching to the beat of their own drum. And it was such a special thing. And I remember being so like invested in the first season. And I felt like I watched it for like 5 years, just because it felt so, it took so much of me, that it just felt like I was, like, it was so special to me instantly from the word go.
It's amazing to kind of compare Drag Race, like, because my sort of easiest comparison that I can make, especially something that I watched when I was young, is America's Next Top Model. And America's Next Top Model evokes, you know, the exact opposite feelings in a young girl, you know, to like march to the beat of your own drum, you know, live in your truth. You can do anything you want to be. It's like Tyra is like, you know, she's a tyrant, and just
between your teeth more,
like honest to God, like, just the worst treatment of people imaginable. And I ate it up. I absolutely loved it, you know. It was true like aspirational content for me at the time. And watching Drag Race for the first time sort of with America's Next Top Model in mind, I just couldn't believe how much extra work there was for the queens to do. Mm. Like, I'm in awe of all the models on Top Model, but like, I think it was the first or the second episode of season five, you know, they have to have a look and then they have to go into like a water tank and model within the water tank, and no one else is doing like their makeup or their wigs or like telling them what to do. It's just like, go in there and model in the water tank. And I was like, if this is Top Model, there's a team of people to make sure that they look great, and these queens are doing absolutely everything on their own, and they have to be funny as well. And I was just like, at that moment my mind was completely blown, and I was like, okay, there's no fucking around here. Like, these are hard working people.
Yeah, like RuPaul pitched the show was pitched as America's Next Top Model meets Project Runway meets America's Got Talent. Like, it's like, you have to be able to do everything. Mm. Like, on Drag Race, you have to be able to sing, dance, act, construct, sew, and then talk about your dead dad, all in like 20
Should we maybe, if there are people listening who haven't watched Drag Race yet, should we maybe talk about like the formula, like the, for each episode, like what it is that actually happens?
Do you mind if I do it?
Absolutely. Yeah, go right ahead. Absolutely.
Yeah.
General formula of drag, how to make a Drag Race cake is it usually starts with a mini challenge, which is a silly challenge where the queens make a fool of themselves for cheap laughs to warm you into the episode. And then it would be a main challenge. And the main challenge varies from, as we said, so many different things. It could be a design challenge where the queens have to make an outfit from scratch from unconventional materials like bin bags or like dog toys or like hair. There's so many different things they've done. Or else it could be a scripted acting challenge where they have to learn a script, create a character and film it all in the same day. Or else it could be so many different things, like a dancing, a full musical. There's so many different things. And then ultimately that main challenge is presented to the judges, as well as a runway where each week there's a new theme and the queens have brought looks to show on that theme. And then they're judged against each other. And then someone is announced the winner, and two queens have to lip sync for their life to see if they'll survive till the next week.
It's the perfect summation of each episode of it. Ideal. I found the formula just so easy to sink into. It was exactly that with the early challenge where you're just like, okay, this is just a bit of fun, you know. And the queens will obviously make it like the most dramatic, yeah, like just like the pettiest shit like you've ever seen in your life, but it's really, really fun. But then yeah, it does get serious then, and how seriously they take these challenges is amazing. Like, they really, and like in the season I watched, like they're fighting like constantly, like people are just calling each other out, being mean, like it's so you have
seasons
that element
four
as well.
And five are the contentious ones, I think. Ooh, the ones, right, where there's ones who really, really don't get on, I think. Season four and five are the big ones for that. Yeah.
Can we talk about Rolaska talks? I need to talk about those three. I texted Alan and Sarah in the WhatsApp group, and I was like, if I hear the word Rolaska talks one more time when these people walk into this room, I'm going to scream and I'm going to turn this off. Like, what's your thoughts, both of you, on Rolaska talks?
Thank you. I have so many thoughts. I think it is one of the best story producing by a queen, like by queens ever. It sets out that we are a trio, and it makes everyone on the outside of Rolaska talks the enemy. In a different season, in season three, they do something similar. They have the Heathers and the Boogers. But this is a very concentrated version of it in season five, where these three queens, who are arguably one of the most the most put together and talented, and they all come from different walks of life, so they have
and Roxy Andrews, yeah.
Poor Roxy.
Cox are also there. And all three of them, like, just make this perfect Mean Girls group where ultimately, like, it leads to the reason why Jinx Monsoon does so well, because she is the opposite of all of them.
What did you think of them, Alan?
It got, because the thing about, like, that, like Jenny said, in season three, we had the Heathers and the Boogers. And with the Heathers and the Boogers, it was it Delta, Raja, and...
Carmen and someone else.
Yeah. But when it got to the reunion, it became very apparent that Delta was really into the idea and it really had formed a huge part of her self-esteem. And the others were like, no, we were just messing for the show. That was not, wasn't... But she was like basically wearing Heather's merch in the reunion. They were like, we don't do that anymore. What are you doing? Whereas with Alaska Talks, it feels like, again, there's like, I feel like Detox and Alaska can take it or leave it. Mm. They're just kind of messing around with it. Mm. And again, Rossy Andrews has formed part of her self-esteem around it.
But isn't it Alaska that later decides, like, oh, I'm no longer part of Alaska Talks now? And then the other two were like...
Alaska was always bigger than it, though.
Yeah, she was.
I was always surprised that she was getting into that. Because in season four, Sharon Needles, her boyfriend, was a complete, like, completely out on her own. You know? Mm. Like, was really... Because Sharon Needles was the first, like, weird, gothy, grungy queen. Up to there, it had all been very, like, classic, put-together, like, ballroom stuff. And in season four, it was like, oh, there's, you know, comedy queens exist, right? Like, they're a thing. Mm. And Sharon was like, there. And then Alaska took that one step further. But, so yeah, I was just surprised that Alaska was my main thing with Alaska Talks, because she'd seen how those kind of cliques work against Sharon Needles previously.
Well, I think she knew exactly what she was doing. I feel like she went into it with, okay, I need to make sure I'm not just Sharon Needles' boyfriend. I need to be more than that. And so by separating herself from that and, like, going with her friends, like, she knew who Detox was. And so, like, and then Roxy came in gorgeous, just so beautiful. That, like, it just makes sense for, like, if you know that if you aren't, you're, it's not just about the talent, it's trying to be a good contestant and a good reality star, and so trying to make the stories for yourself, I thought was very smart. And then I think when Alaska then steps away from it is because she's like, uh-oh, they are trying to use this against us, when I thought this was going to benefit us.
It's interesting to see an alliance like that form in a show that doesn't involve the contestants voting for each other. Like, you usually see those kinds of alliances in Big Brother or Survivor or something like that. But in this, it isn't. It's not the public until the very end of this series. And it's not the queens themselves. So it's a very good idea to, yeah, like, for those groups, tasks, because Alaska would win like so many of the first task and then get to pick her crew, and so it's so useful to have it for stuff like that, so that you know you have the best people if you're doing like a sketch or something. Like, you have someone that's funny, you have someone that's really beautiful, like it, so it's gonna look good. But then to sort of just be like, no, we're not doing that anymore. Now I'm on my own. And it also gives her, like, she's designed like an arc for herself for the season where she gets to, like, come out as her own thing. And it's so smart. Yeah. It's so, so smart. Like, I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. Because I thought the three of them were making a huge mistake when I saw them first doing it. And then she did that. And I was like, okay, you won. You won out of that. And I think Roxy lost out of that because... it was clear that she took it very seriously. I don't know if she thought the three of them would win together or something, but, like, there was some delusion going on there with her. God love her. So who's favorite queens from, or how do we feel about Jinx Monsoon?
I love her. Jinx Monsoon from the, like, this season, like, specifically stands out to me. Because, like, I feel like Jinx Monsoon is the show at its best. I feel like having this person come in who's rough around the edges, but is so talented and just, like, is herself unapologetically and is a little weird and different, but she is given the opportunity to thrive. And like, I just remember just seeing myself in Jinx Monsoon, and I thought she was so amazing. And I'm also so amazing. No, I just thought I just like that's so amazing. I love Jinx Monsoon. What do you think, Alan?
Oh, I thought she was amazing from the start. And like, she's carried it through. Like, wasn't she in Chicago recently as well?
Yeah, in the beginning.
Was she Roxy Hart, I think, or something? Yeah, in Chicago.
Wow. Oh my God. That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So, like, it wasn't a fluke, and it wasn't like a pity vote because of Raska Talks. Like, Jinx is the real deal. Jinx can do it. Like, Jinx was on Seth Meyers recently as well.
In Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The first moment I saw her falling asleep at her desk with her voiceover talking about her narcolepsy, I knew I was gone. Like, my heart, I was like, yeah, my heart belongs to this person. Like, Alyssa was my... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just quoting her. I'm Seattle's first Jewish narcoleptic drag.
Like, just like from that moment, I was like, you're coming home with me. Like, this is too much. Like, I loved her, and she was second to Alyssa for me. Alyssa was my absolute favorite. Like, immediately, as soon as I saw her, I was like, this, like, she's for me. She's my queen. And yeah, I mean, there's also that drama, that storyline with Alyssa and who's her adversary?
Okay. Coco. Alyssa. Coco Montrese.
Yeah. And that was like, and both of them, like, when they walk in and they spot each other, and I was just like, okay, great. What is this? You know? And immediately on Alyssa's side, just because there's something like her face is obviously just the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And the expressions that she does, I try and practice like her mouth. I try to be able to do it. It's impossible.
Can you give us some of your Alyssa? Give me some of your Alyssa.
Absolutely cannot. 100% cannot. But like, I'd be watching it on the couch with my boyfriend with my headphones on while he's watching golf or something. Very, very straight couple kind of setup. me watching Drag Race, him watching golf. And I'd be like making like the faces with my mouth, and he's looking up like, what are you doing? And I'm like, doing Alyssa. I'm sorry. But yeah.
And this is amazing. Is amazing because is it either Katya or in All Stars 2 says that like Alyssa's face, like she had to be a drag queen.
Yeah.
Her face is just made to take on like drag makeup. It's like someone's been evolutionary perfectly formed to be a drag queen.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. She's got literally the most interesting face I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, just, it should be studied. It's incredible. But then, yeah, when she went, immediately it was Jinx then that all my kind of my love passed on over to. So I was happy.
I will say, in defense of Coco Montrese, that like obviously for those that don't know, this is a rivalry between when at the beginning of the season, Coco Montrese and Alyssa Edwards walk in, and like this dramatic music as if Alyssa had stolen Coco's child starts playing, and what happens is they're just like, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. We're not going to discuss that now. And like, so for the next like episode or two, you don't really know what's happened. And even by the end of the series, it's never really said what happened. No. What happened was like, Alyssa was crowned Miss Gay USA. And in the pageant, drag queen pageant system, which is huge in the States. And so, but a part of that, you had to like go to different, places for to do a number the next year when they were running it throughout the country. And so you had obligations to fulfill. And so Alyssa doesn't do it because, mom, I'm busy. I can't be doing all that. And so she's doing all that. And by that, I mean, she's looking in the mirror. And so Coco, who came second, took her crown because that
snatched
was what...
It.
That's what happened. And so Alyssa cannot take it. And so they're like screaming at each other. There's so much tears. It's just the cherry on top of a season that already is so stacked. And then you have this outside at this like this outside force pushing in that you never really find out about. See the photo of Coco in Alyssa's crown on her mirror. And then they, oh, it's so good.
It's delicious. And Coco is bang to rights. Like, Coco, like, all she did was step into, like, you know, it was like when Lisa Simpson was Little Miss Springfield. Like, it's, you know, the runner-up has to do the duties. You have to go and advertise the cigarettes, whatever it is that you have to do. Like, she was dead right. She was 100% right. And yet I was still like, I could still feel it from Alyssa's point of view. I was still like, but you did win. And Alyssa kept saying things like, you never got that moment. Like, I had the moment and you had all the work. And I was like, oh, that is so cold. Cold. It's so cold.
Oh my god, look how orange you fucking are.
Whenever Coco would be talking about it, it's always mid makeup with the like streaks.
That eye. Put some more pink in that eye.
And like just the most like serious, like furious face with this like outrageously like half done makeup, just contour, like nothing else, completely orange, incredible. Yeah, I loved that whole storyline and was like watching it while, you know, on Reddit threads about Miss Gay USA trying to find out what the tea was. Like it was great. Were there other controversies kind of outside of this season? Sorry, I know I'm very season five centric because it's the only one I've seen. But what about other controversies in other seasons, like big moments that you that you hold dear to
big
your heart?
Big fights.
I mean, controversies or like, because Drag Race has so much as a lot of controversy.
Yeah, sure.
But like in terms of iconic moments, to stick a little bit more with the joyful craziness of it, nothing will beat in season three as of my second favorite season. And in season three, during a lip sync, Mimi Arm First picks up India Farah and puts her over her shoulder mid lip sync and screaming. And then the song stops and RuPaul goes, drag is not a contact sport.
Oh my god.
And India is screaming, get her off of me. Oh, it is.
And like, Mimi had spent like the four episodes before that, like living up to her name in every possible way. Like she was a nightmare. And then they brought her back for All Stars and she was immediately again a nightmare and immediately went. It was, yeah, that was mad. I still can't believe someone actually did that. Fifi O'Hara and Sharon Needles in season four hated each other. It was like the glamour and comedy queen, like dichotomy, like they could not be more of themselves than they possibly could. And Fifi was just so furious that Sharon was doing well, even though Fifi was so beautiful. She couldn't understand why her beauty wasn't getting her more like first places. It was like she didn't understand that the first three seasons, like a glamour queen had won. And then it was like, and the criticism at the time was, it was queens who were very much queens in the that took after RuPaul himself. So, and then they completely went the other way then for the next three seasons, where they had Sharon Needles, Jinx, and Bianca Del Rio. Sorry. Yeah. And Fifi was just wrong place, wrong time. She one season earlier, she could have been a contender, and just it was not what they were looking for that season. And it was just driving her to a really ugly place. I'd never seen someone shout as much in Drag Race as Fifi O'Hara. She was just on edge.
I gotta Google her to see if I know her face.
And then God bless her. Like she like after that season, like she couldn't work. Like no one would hire her because she had been such amazing television and makes that season so memorable. Like this is one of the first times we're mentioned in season four. Like it's one of, like her and Sharon's opposition to each other, like is so good. And like they have such iconic fights where like Tired ass showgirl, Sharon calls Fifi.
Go back to Party City
where you belong.
Yeah.
To Sharon. Whereas like then like Fifi, who goes on to be on All Stars 2 is a fabulous season. Like she talks about that, like she wasn't hired anywhere. People thought she would start fighting with people and punching people, but like obviously, like the way Drag Race is filmed, they like in 1 week they'll film 3 episodes, and so like in 1 week you could have made a whole outfit, starred in a musical, and had to learn an entire script for a sitcom, and then and that continues on for like 3, 4, 5 weeks if you make it to the end, like, and so like you just get this perfect recipe for from a television perspective where you see these people who already are like, this is their moment, this is their first time being on TV, and it just boils over where these people are pushed to the limits, and you have producers saying like, oh well, Sharon's like really, god, isn't it crazy that she wore that, isn't that right, Fifi? And then give her the reaction that they want, and so like, but it makes such good television, but like, it's so easy to forget that these are like, ultimately it makes or breaks people's lives.
Mm. And they will spend thousands to get there as well, because they buy all like new outfits and stuff for the show. And then if they go early, none of it gets seen. So they've spent like, was it up to 20 grand? Some of them were spending it like by like season 8, 9.
The recent series, like in the most recent series, people are spending upwards of 20 grand. And like sometimes way more than that. And so it really is it in recent years, the main critique of the show is like, it's become the competition of who has the most money. Mm. And on season 7, they told a story that like when they get their paycheck, after the first episode, because obviously the queens are paid per episode, not very well, but they're paid for episode, like they had to go to the bank immediately that day because so many queens had gone into overdraft because they'd spent all their, and so they had to deposit it into their bank straight away. And like that is what happens because it's such a big deal and maybe not as much anymore because it's been so oversaturated, but it's such a big deal to like, this is your moment, make it count.
I feel like Rue has enough money to be supplementing a bit of that, you know.
Yeah,
even a bit, even half, you know. That's
well, there was also a thing where like they're only allowed to bring a certain amount of suitcases, so the LA based queens can actually bring more because they don't have to fly. So Willem had like 4 cases of shoes or something.
It was
winter in her season.
Can only have 6 items or something, and so like everyone else showed up with like 6 suitcases, but Willem shows up with like huge like plastic boxes that are just gigantic and says, oh well, it's only 6.
Right. Oh my god. Oh, so this like this, it's starting before even shooting is happening. This competition. And it's drag. So the Drag Race format is obviously coming from like drag races before that, like and kind of adapted for television. But drag isn't always a competitive sport in name, you know, but there is a lot of, you know, natural competition that will arise when you are in a community where, you know, there's a lot more of you than there is space on a stage or room for people, especially before Drag Race even like took off. So I guess to be a drag queen, you have to have like the kind of like a competitive streak in you, whether or not you're competing with other drag queens, it doesn't really matter. You still have to be competitive, which I'm like, you're already so many other things. You're already beautiful and talented and you know how to sew, and you're also competitive and driven. And yeah, I'm just so in awe of all of them. Like,
I think though, like you said, like briefly touched there on like drag is innately competitive outside of the show. Like it's kind of had like Drag Race is less reflective of the drag community. And instead the drag community has become reflective of Drag Race of like, this is kind of created a homogenous idea of this is what drag is, because Drag Race often doesn't show a very diverse range of what drag is. And so like you have to be everything to win Drag Race. You have to be funny, talented, be able to dance, sing, and also be vulnerable and not be too egotistical, because people still need to like you. Whereas reality, like, drag queens are often horrible. Like, they can be mean, they can be tired, they can just get on stage and sing one song and go off, and they deserve to do so.
Absolutely. And
it's just specifically with, like, younger drag queens. I have a friend, the doll named Dan is a London-based drag queen, and she does everything she can to not follow that. And it's just so beautiful to see, like, groups of people rebelling against this homogenous kind of mainstream idea of drag again. And I just find that the most interesting, but I just love Drag Race.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's, I was curious about how different drag communities feel about Drag Race now that it is, like, an empire. You know, it's not a, it's not the little show that could anymore. It's like, it's mainstream, you know? So yeah, it's interesting to hear that there are people who are like, no, this is not reflective of all drag, you know?
And, like, drag kings have never been on the show. There's never been a drag king on the show. Never on any franchise. The closest is they've recently had like people that were assigned female at birth who are drag queens on the show. Mm. And two of them, one on Drag Race Germany and one on Canada versus the world. That's some this is some higher level stuff we're getting into now. Dressed in, like, boy drag, and, like, those are the two examples of, like, drag kingness on the show. Mm. And you can even see in season 5, like, Alaska in the Barnyard Buddies.
Yes.
Alaska does it in boy drag and they tear her apart for
it. They hate it. I thought Alaska looked amazing, and I thought it fit the, like, there wasn't a ton of work that went into the look, but it was in service of the sketch that they were doing. And it never rang a bell for me that would be something that would be inappropriate. But everyone tore her apart for it. It was, yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if, like, there was, like, a big online reaction to that or not, but they seemed to get a bit better about that later on in seasons. Was it Kennedy Davenport did Little Richard for Snatch Game?
Yeah.
Which went down really, really well. So they gotten a bit better at it, and, like, they had, like, was it Max used to wear mustaches and stuff, or am I thinking someone else?
Milk wore a beard.
Milk, yeah.
And then on season 7, they had a runway that was bearded.
Yeah, so they're figuring it out, I guess.
Really, like, the show has definitely grown and progressed, and, like, they have crowned, you know, they wouldn't let trans women who were actively transitioning on the show. They really wanted to show the transformation of, oh my God, look at these guys and other girls. Mm. Whereas, like, on season 4, they made Jiggly Caliente, one of the contestants, stop taking hormones to go on the show. And, like, if you had any, like, breast augmentation or anything, it wasn't until really All-Stars 6 which came out 2 years ago, like, that anyone with any form of surgical enhancements is allowed on the show. Like, queens had been having filler and Botox, but as long as they still presented male, quote unquote, they were still very much welcome on the show.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because season 5 has a trans woman on it. I can't remember her name. I think she goes out quite early, like
Monica Beverly Hills.
Yeah, and there was, I don't know what it was, like, the editing or something, but she says it, like, at the judging. I think she breaks down crying, and then comes out, and then it's kind of everyone's Rue just says something like, we support you in being yourself or something, and then it's just, that's it. So it's like, for me, I kind of got the impression that they didn't really know what to do in that moment. Like, that like that moment like in the room, but also that the producers and whoever was editing it was like, well, we have to keep it in, but we don't want to make too much of a thing out of it because, you know, and
a home would understand.
Yeah. It was really interesting how quickly it was kind of brushed past. But it's good to know that in the later seasons, you know, kind of more.
Yeah, was it Peppermint was the next trans woman?
Yeah, well, Peppermint would have been like, there's been trans women on almost every season. It's just about,
that's
like,
true. Yeah.
Peppermint comes out on season 9. On season 9, and during the filming as a trans woman, she'd lived as a trans woman before then, but like. Mm. She didn't go into it outwardly saying that. Peppermint, which was like still like 4 years after this point, so like,
yeah,
so much is, yeah.
I'm trying to think I'm just trying to think of all the moments where I was like, I have to bring this up on the podcast. I'm gonna look at a big list of all their names and see what comes to mind. I'm sorry.
I have a question. What did you think of, like, as someone that's never touched on Drag Race before, what did you think specifically of the Snatch game, like the celebrity impersonation game?
Oh, that's the one where they're all in the
boxes.
Oh my god. I loved it. And you know what? I think, was it, did Alaska do, or was it Ivy Winters did Kesha? Whoever did Kesha.
Box did Kesha.
Detox doing Kesha and going around the front and taking a piss and no one liked it. I loved that. I absolutely loved it. And I was like, this is amazing. This is so, you know, it's like, it's mean enough to be funny, but it's not so mean that you're like, ugh. Like, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. And everyone hated it. Rue hated it. I was like, this is the only time where I actually know better than all of you in this moment. But I loved the Snatch game. Again, I'm awful with names, but one of the queens did impersonated someone that nobody else really knew who she was.
Jinx Monsoon did Little Edie.
That was it. And like, just, and it was like, really worrisome leading up to it. I was like, I don't know, like, no, nobody knows this person, how are you going to pull this off? But like, it is such a testament that like, it didn't matter that nobody knew who this person was. Like, that character was so real and just there. She was amazing. I thought that whoever did Janet Jackson was incredible.
Coco
did Janet Jackson. Like, probably my favorite was Janet Jackson in terms of the look and the actual impersonation. I was like, yeah, that's spot on. But yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I just love people doing impressions. So it like really tickles the part of my brain that gets like very excited by people impersonating people very well. I can't remember who did awful on that one.
Katy Perry as Alyssa Edwards as Katy Perry.
Yeah.
And RuPaul Mixer sent a tweet out saying, like, dear at Katy Perry, you are still a firework, but I did you dirty.
Yeah, that wasn't Alyssa's finest moment at all. No.
Fabulous.
The thing amazing about Snatch Game is that, like, however you do in Snatch Game to me is kind of how you actually end up in the season. Like, it can really elevate someone that isn't otherwise good, and it'll completely tarnish someone if they do a shit Snatch Game to me. And I will never get like fully be behind them if their Snatch Game is shit. Like in season two, Tatiana did Britney Spears in the first Snatch Game. And it's still one of the best Snatch Game performances ever, in my opinion. And I will forever think Tatiana is a top tier queen because of how good her Britney Spears was in Snatch Game.
Yeah.
Like, and was it Bob did like, Carl Duncan did three characters?
Uzu and Your Wonderful Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. He switched costumes halfway through to do two characters because he couldn't pick. And it was like, and they were both brilliant. Like, again, Bob is a elite Drag Race contestant for me. Yeah.
I will say nothing will be, they do eventually do an all winner season, of course, and All-Star 7, and nothing will beat Jinx Monsoon as Judy Garland. It is just breathtaking. It's so good.
So while we're talking about Snatch Game, we should probably talk about the judges. Because Andrea, you texted me that you didn't like Michelle Visage.
I don't get
who is the longest running judge on the show.
I was afraid because I don't know how people feel about Michelle Visage, but I was like, I don't know this person. I don't like her attitude. And I don't know why she's here. And I've no idea how that's like, she may well be completely beloved, but there was just something about her. I was like, I don't know. I don't know, man. So what's like, do people like her?
Yeah. They do, but I think in those early seasons, she has a very fixed opinion of what she likes.
Mm.
And it took a while for her to like, just kind of open up to styles of drag that weren't what she encountered in like New Jersey and New York in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
But I think she has become more of a mentor type person to them. But it was very, probably by season five, people probably had warmed to her, but definitely in season three when she came in first, or season two, even, whenever it was. It was like, I'd never heard of her. And it was like, oh, she's RuPaul's friend. Okay. So she's getting away with saying some mean stuff here that maybe someone else wouldn't.
Yeah, Michelle, like compared to Ru, Ru has an ability to like be like really funny and read people, but also when the time comes, be really supportive and offer like a supportive word, especially in the judging. Whereas Michelle, I just feel like, I feel like she takes a dislike to somebody at the beginning of the series and it just never is really shaken off. In season five anyway, and like she really took against the concept of Rolaska Talks rightly, but you know, I think that actually like affected a lot of the kind of the feedback that she was giving those three girls. And yeah, there was something about her that I didn't really warm to. I don't know. Jenny, do you like her? What's your feelings about her?
I mean, like, my feelings are, I kind of look at the show in a very, like, I look at it as a reality show. I'm very much thinking of, like, everyone is playing a role. What is everyone doing? And like RuPaul, like Michelle Visage's role is to be the Simon Cowell. It's to make sure that every week they have someone that will give the negative critiques and have an antagonist that, you know, oh, the girls will have to try to impress. And eventually they do. And then you get this whole full circle moment. But particularly in the early seasons, like she is even way up to like season 9 or 10, like she just is so out of pocket and just says things. Like even with the Alaska Fox thing, like one of them is crying and then the other one reaches out to like hold their hand and she's like, what's this? And then Detox is like, oh, we're Alaska Talks. Then she slams her fist on the table and goes, no. Are dangerous, are they? Like, what are you talking about?
Don't like, support your friend ever.
You horrible monster, even though I'm here because my friend owns this show. I feel like she is still kind of a divisive figure, but like she's become more untouchable, kind of like RuPaul in recent years. The judges are very aware of the power of the fans because of how big the show is. And so like recent seasons, like the judges, like RuPaul doesn't give any critiques. RuPaul stands there and nods and like maybe will lightly say something, but she doesn't give any critiques because they know like, oh, if they hate RuPaul, they're not going to watch. And so if RuPaul stays as this entity, it's fine. Whereas Michelle can just be a little mean, but I think she's an important fixture of the show and I wouldn't want to see her gone.
Yeah. Whereas when Santino left, I was like, grand. That's fine. Yeah. Santino, I guess he does come from like Project Runway and that kind of place. So I don't know. Also, I think a lot of the queens found him hot, which confused me. But I think so there was a weird power dynamic with that. So, yeah. But yeah, I never warmed to him, really.
I feel like all of his critiques were just like, all his feedback was like, you're beautiful or you're not beautiful enough. I didn't feel like there was very much like beyond that. It was like, he never, and I suppose it makes sense if he's coming from like not from drag or not from comedy, but he never really had much to say about like performances. It just feels like he was only ever talking about like clothes or how beautiful someone was or how they hold themselves, and then beyond that, not very much. But like, was he like replaced with somebody?
Yeah, replaced by it. So now Ross Matthews and Carson Kressley switch out every episode or so. I think Ross Matthews is very good. I really enjoy him on it. Again, because he's a comedian, he's from E, so it's that it's he's in the same world, you know. I think it makes sense to me. How about you, Jenny?
Yeah, it makes sense to me, and I just love Ross Matthews gives critiques in a very specific way. And it's so funny, like, but he doesn't mean to be. He's trying to be very sincere. And he's like, you know that feeling when you're going up a cliff and then you slip on your shoelace, fall down, break your neck, and accidentally hit three children. But afterwards, you get really nice jello at the hospital. That was kind of what your performance was. Like, like, it's just so good. And I just love... is really aware of its absurdity, and like I think it's important that like the art is taken very seriously, but I feel like when it gets it has a tendency to be quite formulaic, and when it breaks it just by being so stupid, it really starts to it's starting to shine.
Yeah, because obviously like when they're in the runway they are like doing comments and puns and stuff, and I would imagine 70% of those are pre-written. Definitely the ones for celebrity guests. They're not coming up with those on the fly. But
oh,
like,
yeah,
sometimes they will genuinely, someone will come up with one and you can hear the other three people lose their shit about how funny it is. And I do like those other moments. And again, it's not Santino coming up with those. It's Carson Kressley or Graham Norton or Ross Matthews, you know?
Yeah.
How do you feel about the guest judges?
I think they're so funny, especially in the earlier seasons. Like, there's this running joke. There was Alaska from the season and Willem from season 4 have a podcast. And, like, they always refer to... their podcast is they rewatch every episode of Drag Race and review it. And they always refer to, like, when the guest judge is announced and, like, the queens act as if, like, it's Cher being on the show. Like, yeah. And this... special guest judge is an extra from season 4 of Scrubs, and then they're like, oh my god. And I just think like I think the something that I think Drag Race is at its best when the best queens are competing to be the best like America's Next Drag Superstar, which isn't often the case. Often it's very story-led. And so I feel like guest judges are fine if they know what they're doing. Like if you get like an SNL performer on a skit challenge, like that makes sense. They could give constructive but like what is some twink selling an album gonna say about like a full rusical? Like you don't know any like a ball, like what? And so I just feel like the queens are so talented, and I think their talent should be taken seriously, and also who can make comments about it, because when the judges make comments about things, it gives permission to the fans to say stuff. And so like someone is already making a comment and giving a platform to someone that doesn't really know what they're talking about, then the fans feel like they can give their opinion.
Oh, do you not think that Jeffrey Moore, an Absolute Vodka marketing / branding executive, has things to say about drag? He showed up and it was like, oh, and from Absolute Vodka, this guy. I was like, what? Get out of here.
I mean, Mr. Charisma can say whatever he wants about drag.
I was like, who is this person? I know you have a deal to make, but they're out in the... they're out untucking with their Absolute Vodka cocktails.
It's almost
you know?
He's like, if there was like a Hallmark version of drag, he would be the corporate villain that they're fighting
yeah,
against.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
That was so strange. I thought Juliette Lewis was really good as a judge on this season. That made sense to me. Like her as a performer, she's just so, she can be so big and so like... characterful, and I just love her, and I thought she was a really good judge. I laughed when I saw Camille Grammer, who is in one of the Housewives things, but I don't watch those, so I'm just like, oh, that's Fraser's wife is just here to critique the drag queens, and that just made me laugh a lot.
It's so good. Just sometimes it's so absurd and like that just doesn't make any sense. And like it's nice to see like the big stars on it. Like in later seasons, they have like Lady Gaga, Ariana Grande, Miley Cyrus, Christina Aguilera, and like that is so gratifying to see. Is like, oh my god, this is huge. These queens deserve this. Mm-hmm. But then the next week, it's Jeffrey Moran back for an eighth.
I always feel like you can tell how good they're going to be by how they respond to Rue's introduction. If they just go, happy to be here, Rue, you go, oh, this is going to be shit. This is going to be so bad. Whereas they actually have a joke back, then it's probably going to be okay.
Yeah. So,
this is the best day of my life. I'm killing myself tomorrow.
yeah. I was going to say something. Ooh, yeah, tell me this. So who are your favorite like drag queens? Like, so we know Jinx. Who else do you recommend to people? It's like if they see someone coming up in the series, like, this is the one Jenny said was really good. Who are we talking about?
Well, like if we're talking Drag Race specific, I feel like from US Drag Race, Jinx Monsoon has always been on my top of the top. But I also adore Jada Essence Hall, who is on season 12. I also really adore, I really love Alexis Mateo from season 3. There's something about, she was the first queen I like, oh, I want her to win. Like, I was never like so
in. Really?
I really wanted Alexis Mateo to win because I was like, she is the most talented and most beautiful. Like, I just thought she was so fabulous. And I just think she's so charming. And I just think it's so good. But then for UK, I'd recommend watching season 2 of UK. It's one of the best seasons that they have. And
yeah,
finds the having cultural touchstones that are closer to home. It just adds a layer to Drag Race that makes it even better.
Yeah, which Rue doesn't always get. I think Michelle Visage has kind of immersed herself in British culture, but I don't think Rue was quite there yet. Definitely stuff that goes over RuPaul's head. Have you seen any of them live?
I met Jada Essence Hall.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When she was there in the George, we had a very deep emotional moment. I went to the meet and greet with her, and like I said to her, like this was just like her season aired during COVID and during like 2020. And I like she would do all these Instagram lives every week, and I'd watch them all the time because what else would I be doing? And when I met her like a year and a half later, I said to her like, oh, I loved your Instagram lives. And like it touched something so deep inside of her, because it was like, why did that, why anyone think about that? That like she was on the stage and she mentioned it, like, you there, you talked to me about Instagram Live. And I literally like felt like the world go from underneath me. I was like, oh my god, Jada, love of my life. Like, yeah, it just really, it was so special. I'm meeting Sasha Colby in November. She's coming to the George. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I love her.
I don't think I've seen her season. It might be new to me.
What happened?
No, okay, cool. Okay, that's exciting. We like obviously Waterford's not a big drag city, but Raja came here a couple of years ago. Incredible. Like, she came out, like crawled across the bar and started making out with someone, and then started like take like, and the outfits were all incredible. For the finish, one of the other drag queens was doing lip syncing to All I Want for Christmas Is You, and Raja came out and went, this is my favorite song, and just did a full on karaoke version of it with her, which is amazing to see.
Yeah. Raja did Raja was on at the Mother Block party and at Pride, and she got up on the stage and like the crowd just like worshipped her. Like she didn't do like huge dance moves, she just stood up there and like the crowd just went nuts and like was chanting her name like it was no one's business. And then she asked the audience if anyone had any weed, and like on, and then she like reaches into the audience, takes a joint out of someone's hand, gets on stage and smokes it on the stage, and oh, it was glorious.
That's she's amazing. A supermodel, like she's amazing looking. Yeah. Okay. I could just go season by season with you for 8 hours, but we should finish. Jenny, is there anything else you want to say we haven't talked about?
I would say that Drag Race is so special to me, but it's so special to a lot of queer people, and people feel very protective of it because, you know, my experience of seeing myself be singing is something that probably 100 people experience today. They've come across it for the first time, and like I think like that sometimes leads to like people being very defensive about it and very mean to the queens because they feel a sense of ownership on it, and like that is particularly aimed at queens of color, get that to no end, and that shows up in like when we talk about like, oh, have you met anyone, who have you seen live, like now, like it's so often like it's the white queens that get the bookings because it is such a big white fan base. Mm-hmm. And like even though Drag Race gives such a platform to so many people, like I think it's worth noting that like it isn't an equal opportunity even when you get on the show, and like of course economic barriers, but then like if you weren't popular with the fans, you're not going to be booked around the world, and the experience has changed so much when it's become so oversaturized. Mm. And like I care so much about Drag Race and I care so much about drag, and those are two very different things, and I'd encourage anyone listening to like really like support any L queen in their area to like go see their show, tell them that they're beautiful, tell them that they're talented, because like drag isn't about Drag Race. And like tell your local nightclub, like, oh my god, for Pride next year, I really love if we looked into these people, and like really being conscious of what you're asking for. And like, yeah, I think it's really important to make sure that like we're all trying to lift each other up together, and not just people who've been on a TV show, or particularly white twinks on a TV show, who are truly the enemy for us all. That's all.
Thank you so much, Jenny McGuire. Please plug and promote anything you want to plug and promote.
Yep.
Where can people find you?
Yeah. So for me personally, my Twitter and Instagram are at Jenny MAGUIOR. But really, I am a co-organizer of Trans and Intersex Pride Dublin. We are the largest alternative pride organization on the island. We do protests, we do vigils, we do things that nourish the community and that are solely pure of the community. We don't accept any corporate funding. We're solely community based. If you want to check us out, really appreciate it. Thank you both so much for having me.
Thanks, Jenny. Andrea, where can we find you?
Thank you so much for coming on, Jenny. I really loved the chat. You can find me on Twitter no more. You can find me on Instagram, Andrea Cleary__. And you can find me on Blue Sky if people are there. And I've got a rake of invite codes. If anybody wants one, DM me or message me if you know me, and come on over. But that's where I am. Alan?
Yeah, not on Twitter anymore either. But I am Blue Sky, Alan McGuire, something Blue Sky, I don't know. Juvenalia is Juvenalia_pod on Twitter for how much longer? Who knows? We're Juvenalia Pod on Instagram. We have a Blue Sky account as well. It's a confusing time for everybody.
Yeah.
We have a Patreon, patreon.com/Juvenalia, where we have a whole bonus series where we talk about what we started and finished recently, which we're going to get back to right away because I have a lot to talk about. I've been playing Tears of the Kingdom, Andrea.
Okay.
100 hours in. We got to get Sarah on. We got to get you on. We got to talk about it.
Okay.
And thank you, Dean McDonald, for our artwork. Thank you to Cassie Tall Tales for having us. And thank you again, Jenny McGuire, for letting us talk about Drag Race. Or so long. Bye.